name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I, too, am doing quite well. We are back to break down a very exciting double episode here. What do you think? First of all, let's just dive right into this. What do you think of the double episode in general, Dom? I want to get to the hard-hitting stuff right away.
Okay, so I think there's a big difference between having two episodes back-to-back, which I love because it's twice as much Survivor, in theory, and then having a double boot episode where you get two episodes crammed into one, so you basically get half as much Survivor as you should. And so I think, yeah, I really like this. It's kind of a shame that the way they did it, it's like they had two of the best episodes of the season in terms of the final outcomes, and they kind of like packaged them back-to-back and then put them on Thanksgiving weekend, or Thanksgiving week, I guess, so that it would get the lowest viewing figures of the entire season. And so I imagine there are going to be some people who took the week off, like casual viewers, who will come back to it next week and think, well, okay, I'm sure I didn't really miss anything. Let's just carry on watching the season. And they don't know what's out there for them, because this was a really good week of Survivor.
Yeah, I think, I mean, first of all, it is, of course, a good distinction to make, because there are times, like, I want to say that Andrea's Boot and Karamoan was one of them, where that was one where it got two, it was the same length hour episode, but with two boots in it, and those definitely do suck. Was that, in fact, the case?
Yeah, and we were vocal at the time saying, okay, this should be, like, one of the crowning moments of the season, and instead it's, like, an afterthought in the last 15 minutes.
Right.
And it was kind of the same way in Heroes vs. Villains, actually, where I think it was Danielle and Candace back-to-back in the same hour, where, you know, in that stage of the game where you have so many crazy things going on, you want to have a full hour to devote to each episode there, but instead we had like 10 pre-merge episodes, and so the entire back half of the season had to be crammed into this really short time frame. So yeah, that really let that season down, and I'm kind of glad that we almost got the reverse here, where we have this massive merge tribe, and so we get to see that phase of the game extended for as long as possible.
Yeah, just for the super nits out there, Candace and then Danielle. I was thinking back to it, and it was Danielle at the back end of it. But yeah, people obviously understood what you were saying. But I'm with you. I like these ones where we get two episodes in the same night. I always think that's really fun. I kind of like make a whole evening out of Survivor. And I think I'm totally with you again that it kind of sucks that it came, first of all, with two episodes that would have been so good if we got a whole week to digest them just individually. And secondly, like you said, on the night before Thanksgiving, you know, when everyone's out traveling or whatever, or with their families, or in England, just acting like it's any other day, where no one's going to be watching regardless. Yeah. So that's kind of a tragedy. But I guess let's get into how all of this went down. And actually, before we do, this is an episode because it was the night before Thanksgiving. I was one of those filthy casuals for the first time in, I think, years. I think this is the first time since Philippines that I can recall missing an episode. I did not watch this episode live. I know you probably missed me. I don't know what there is to say about it, but yeah.
Well, it's you picked a bad one to miss, I think, because the reactions to, especially Stephen getting voted out in the second episode, they were pretty much as you would imagine, but that didn't make them any less fun to read. It was a good night on Twitter, I will say that.
Yeah, you know, it took me a while to get to the point of recognizing that I missed that, because I watched it. I went out with my friends that night, and then I came home and literally watched it at like 2 or 3 in the morning. Upon first seeing Steven voted out, my first thought was not, oh my God, I wish I'd been on Twitter tonight. It was, how can I move on? Am I going to be able to get through this depression that's going to set on to me for the next couple of months? But I eventually got to that point where I was definitely like, oh fuck, I missed an incredible night on Twitter. I'm sure just all of the tears of RHAP Nation.
I think that's a bit ahistorical, because I woke up the next morning to you saying in an instant message, okay, I'm going to watch the two episodes now. And then 2 hours later, just ha 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 ha, just extending across the entire screen. Which I'm pretty sure I knew exactly when you had posted that.
Okay, we'll have to go back and check the timestamps, Dom. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was being fact-checked here. It was a week ago. You expect me to remember that? Yeah. All right. So let's get into this, and I want to actually start out by pointing out something that we actually talked about last week, where I said I thought it was going to be a big part of the evolution of the strategy of Survivor, where people are anticipating what they're going to have to do the following round and who those conversations they're going to need to have as a result of moves that haven't even happened yet. And that is exactly what we see here, where Jeremy gets back to camp after flipping on Kelly Wigglesworth with Spencer and Steven and the witches, and he knows – and he apparently knew before he left. He says, I knew, you know, before this happened that I was going to have to get back and immediately talk to Tasha. And I just want to point out, like, I think that's a really heads-up play. I think that's absolutely what, like, a great Survivor player would definitely do. And this is, obviously, first of all, looks good for Jeremy's winning chances. Just, this is positive content, plain and simple. But also, in an abstract, you know, in an absolute sense, I mean, This is just good gameplay.
I think it's pretty basic, and I say that knowing that a lot of people do not in fact do it, but I feel like when you're making a move like this and you know that you're flipping on your alliance, you're going to have to do damage control, and that starts the moment you get back to the beach and you're able to talk to them again. So if you're not doing that, I think you're actively hurting yourself, and so the fact that Jeremy was basically doing what he should be doing is, I mean, it's good, certainly, but I don't think it's a cause for celebration.
Well, I mean, I think plenty of people, you know, whether you're doing it on purpose or not, you're going to have a conversation with Tasha that night. But Jeremy is at least being presented as saying, I'm doing this with an expressed intent of improving my game by talking to Tasha, and that's how it's coming across.
Yeah, I guess what I would say is, you see people who, when they do have that conversation, find a way to like turn it into an argument, or they get defensive about the move that they made, and they make it about protecting their own ego and their own reputation, as opposed to massaging over that relationship with the person that they just backstabbed. And I think it's crucial that you just stay on message. Jeremy seems to do that pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I think they both Jeremy and Tasha did a really good job in spots that most people probably mess up, where Tasha, on the other end of that, was saying, you know, to the confessional, you know, you only get one opportunity to leave me out of the loop. At least for me, that's one too many. But whatever, regardless, she's saying to them, oh, no worries, I totally understand, we're all good. And I think that's exactly what you want to be saying as the person who was just scorned, is it's fine, especially in a season with like voting blocks instead of alliances, where it's going to be fluid and people are really just looking for someone to be comfortable with for another 2 days.
Yeah, although it seems like she does actually go back to them after that. She's not playing nice to their face and then hatching this plot to backstab them. We do see her vote against Stephen in the first episode, but then by the second episode, she is firmly in team Jeremy and Stephen again. So quite hard to tell what went down there, but we'll get onto that in due time. And I was curious to see what Tasha's reaction was going to be, because one of the arguments I made against this move was, you know that Tasha, if she doesn't like something, is going to be very vocal about it. And if she feels scorned by you, you can rely on her to go to the other side and approach them and see what she can get together. It seems like she didn't really do that. And for as much as she talks a big game this season, ultimately, when it comes down to it, she's more of like the loyal soldier type. We saw that with Savage and now here again with Jeremy and Steven.
Well, I didn't disagree with that analysis, and you know, when you made it last week, and it makes me wonder, because Tasha totally does seem like someone who wants, you know, she's fine with working with basically anyone that she's not vehemently opposed to for whatever personal reason may get in the way. But you're right, we didn't really see her go for that. So I'm wondering, maybe the other people there, like Spencer or Joe, and then I guess it's also Keith, Wentworth, and Abby. Maybe she didn't feel comfortable going and approaching them, which to me, I don't know, seems a little weird. It seems like some of those people in particular seem like exactly the kind of people she'd want to be working with.
Yeah, and Jeremy and Stephen seemed fairly confident that they would be able to get back in her good graces. So maybe they have a better read on the situation here than we can as viewers, but that seems like a dangerous assumption for them to make, because if it's false, obviously that's very dangerous. But if it's true, then the fact that you're able to backstab Tasha and then just go back and work with her again, to the others, that might be a sign that maybe this alliance is tighter than we thought, that even after a betrayal of that magnitude, they're able to reform and still work together. So either way, it seems like you're opening yourself up for some danger there.
Yeah, and I included Spencer in that group. I realize now he didn't, he was with Steven and Jeremy after this Wigglesworth vote, and he wasn't there until later. But nonetheless, yeah, it definitely is really curious, but maybe it just is, you know, it's Jeremy and Steven doing a really good job keeping Tasha feeling good about them.
Yeah, and we don't get to see even a fraction of the conversations that take place, but it seemed like Jeremy and Spencer both avoided really being the center of attention here after making one of the bigger moves of the season so far, so that's very impressive. Steven, not so much, you know, when he gets voted out twice essentially in the same week, but the other two seem to be doing a pretty good job there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I was talking about that opening scene where Jeremy's talking to Tasha, being like positive winner content for Jeremy, because it seems like when they're presenting it through his eyes of him repairing this potential fracture that could have gone wrong, that's got to mean good things. When they're not presenting it, you know, as they could through Spencer, if he goes on to be this free agent mastermind.
Yeah, and someone else who was left in the dark there was Kimmy, who we both assumed as well would be trying to mix things up and wouldn't take this lying down. But then we see later on, we hear nothing from Kimmy now, and then all that we hear is, oh, well, Stephen and Kimmy are the tightest pair in this game, so they have to be broken up. So it's like, firstly, that came out of nowhere by itself. But then also, it seems like she, like Tasha, was willing to kind of put that aside and move forward with them.
Well, I think, in case we forget to bring up that specific quote again, the thing about them being the tightest duo in the game, that may have just been a Spencer talking point that he was using with everyone to try to flip the game on Steven. That's at least possible to me.
Maybe, but if you're going to make that argument, it has to at least seem plausible to them. And so the fact that that's even a conversation just doesn't match at all with anything that we've seen so far. And this comes back to what I was saying last week about the storytelling this season does seem more and more disjointed, where we see these random things which only seem relevant, or which only come up in conversation when they do seem relevant and when they fit the immediate needs of the story, but they don't really have the seeds sown for them in advance. Now, there is some stuff which, in retrospect, does have this kind of new look to it, like Steven being very suspicious about Jeremy looking for an idol way back in the first episode. That looks hilarious now in retrospect. And also Jeremy saying a few weeks ago that, oh, it's always good to split votes, as if that couldn't have any significance at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we are getting a pretty decent amount of stuff that is set up somewhat longer term, at least compared to what we normally get. And I'm guessing, kind of like the thing with Steven and Jeremy and the idol early on, there's going to be a ton of stuff that once this is all said and done and we rewatch this season for the first time, plenty of things may stand out that we never would or could notice our first time around. And to me, at least, some of the stuff like, hey, if you leave them in the game, they're going to be the closest duo there. When it is potentially just like Spencer propaganda, I'm fine with that kind of coming out of left field. Like, I understand that to a certain extent, not everything can be The Wire, Dom. It can't all be perfectly laid out and set in place with a purpose and then executed masterfully.
Right, but we're not saying enough to judge for ourselves if that is Spencer just feeding them whatever line he thinks will work, or if it's an actual concern that does resonate with other people out there. And it would be nice if we had a better idea of what was actually going on in the game with some of the people that we don't hear as much from, as opposed to them just telling us that when it's convenient.
Well, I feel like with that line in particular, at least, it would have been weird to edit that scene any differently, because it was like either the middle or the very end of a pretty passionate Spencer kind of plea to Jeremy about this is why Steven is such a big threat. And so if they want to show any of that, they can't just cut him off mid-sentence.
No. I'm not saying you don't show that quote. I'm saying at any point in the season so far, you show Steven talking to Kimmy or somebody else expressing that same concern about Steven and Kimmy. You at least give us reason to think that that might be a valid concern, as opposed to just springing that on us when Spencer happens to say it in episode 10 or 11.
Okay, my point was more just, I think it may have just been an offhand remark that they didn't feel needed much explanation.
Okay, but if you don't think that's a good example, then take your pick of any other relationship that we've seen that hasn't been properly developed yet. So even Spencer and Steven, who are two of the bigger characters this season, we hear so much from Spencer about how he's making bonds this time, he's making these relationships, and he's using that to advance him in the game. And Steven entered Tribal Council and left Tribal Council that night thinking that he was BFFs forever with Spencer, and it turns out that wasn't the case. And you know, so that line from Spencer about this being this new philosophy that he's embodying this time, that is actually true of Steven, and yet we never see any of that. It's all couched solely in game terms about how, oh, well, you know, Jeremy's a good person to be working with, and I'm working with Steven for now, and so on. Like, it's never placed on that level. And so, you know, if they're being that careless with one of the defining pairs of the season, then you can look further afield about how, you know, Spencer and Tasha, we see them having this conversation this episode, just like seemingly offhand. We don't get a sense of what their relationship was like coming out of their first season, or if there's any tension there that still remains, or anything like that. It's just, well, we need to show the two of them talking, so here you go. And there's no backstory there. There's no development built into it to make us really care or think about it any further.
Well, I think one of the big things that they seem to be pushing is the idea of voting blocks, and it's a new game every round. And so I think with that in mind, they're going to be a little bit more liberal than maybe they otherwise would be with things popping up out of nowhere when they're only going to play a role in this episode, and they didn't happen until, you know, 10 minutes ago.
Sure, but something like the Steven and Kimmy thing, that's not a recent development. If that's a real thing that you have to be concerned about, that's been true for most of the season now. And same thing with Steven and Tasha, who apparently were very close out there too. So it's not like the reality of the situation conforms with the story they're telling. It's we only know about it when it happens to fit the story, and that's what I'm objecting to here.
Okay, well, I'm not going to put up a big fight about it, although I guess I already did. So okay, let's move it on. Let's go to the reward challenge. We were playing water basketball here. Joe's team comes up with a revolutionary strategy to put Joe in every round. They win a trip to wherever they go. They go away from camp somewhere, which is good enough. They get to eat and watch a Cambodian circus. For the record, this is Spencer, Joe, Tasha, Abby, and Sierra off here. Sierra does her typical Sierra on reward stuff where she tries to flip the game on its head. Anything else of note here, Dom?
Well, I think it's worth noting that after they had this perfect chance to take out Sierra or Kelly Wentworth last week, instead they pass that up. They go after Kelly Wigglesworth, who supposedly was this massive threat. But now it's not like that temporary thing that they had with the women is even converting it into anything long term, because Sierra immediately is going after Steven, and Steven in turn is going after Sierra. So instantly, everything that seemed to be true last week is being turned on its head again, which kind of makes you think, why go to all of that effort and have to do all of this damage control instead of just running out Sierra and being done with it?
Right. I mean, that's why we questioned the move so much. And of course, seeing how this goes on to play out for Steven, I think at this point he probably questions the move himself, where in making that move and flipping and voting out Kelly Wigglesworth, the witches from that point forward really have a lot of room to be playing, and they have no real incentive to be working with you over anyone else. And specific, you know, in particular, if you're Steven Fishback and you're this big mastermind threat and you're the survivor know-it-all and everyone's afraid of you.
Right. And so we also see when Steven wins that reward and has to pick two people to go with him, he has to pick Tasha because he has to patch over those cracks in that relationship with her. In turn, that alienates Spencer and also proves to everybody else how tight they are, which makes it very easy for all of them to gang up on them when they're offering that reward together, as opposed to just, you know, vote out Sierra, probably vote out Wentworth next if Joe keeps winning, and then you can take your shot at Joe, or if Joe is still winning at that point, cut off his legs by voting out Wigglesworth. And yeah. I don't think anyone would really object to that.
Yeah, I mean, of the guys, you know, Steven, Jeremy, Spencer, I think Spencer, it's at least very defensible if he can expect the kind of room to play that he got the following round, where he would not just be lumped in as kind of a Jeremy and Steven lackey, and he could be viewed still as his own kind of independent player that people would be willing to trust with forming a new alliance. I think certainly he's going to be in that free agent spot where he's going to have a ton of room to play, and that's totally fine, and I can understand if, you know, Wigglesworth in particular with Spencer, they were on many teams together, and she apparently never seemed to have any kind of love for him. So I totally understand that. But yeah, for Jeremy or Steven, it seems like you're really setting yourself up to just completely forfeit control of the game almost.
And there's no expectation of loyalty towards Spencer from either Tasha or Kimmy. I think, well, Tasha maybe given their past history together, but in terms of the way the game is playing out at the moment, there's no, like, buy on strong kind of thing that is lingering over from the first half of the game. So Spencer can be his own man if he wants to be. Whereas Jeremy and Steven, when they made this move, they're really putting themselves out there, firstly as a solid pair together, but then also they're showing that they are willing to jump between alliances if it suits them, which, you know, is maybe a good thing to do in the short term. But long term, if everybody knows that that's the case, they have no reason to expect you to come back to them in any given situation.
Right. I would imagine that after this move goes down to blindside Wigglesworth, where Jeremy and Steven really make it clear, like, hey, we were the ones with the decision to make tonight, and I guess Spencer to a certain extent, but if he's able to distance himself from those two, it seems like, yes, you do accomplish your initially questionable goal of booting Kelly Wigglesworth, but it seems like, as we'll go on to see, you also squarely paint potentially the biggest target in the game on your own backs. You know, instead of just making the straightforward play and continuing to have control and a lot of room to play.
Yeah, and I believe Steven has said multiple times in the past that as tempting as it might be to make all of these flashy moves or whatever, just solid ABC Survivor most of the time is gonna serve you well, and that means don't deviate from your alliance unless you have this very solid reason to do so. And even if you think there is some big reason to take out Kelly Wigglesworth, you know, Sierra, as we saw this episode, is a very tempting person to take out as well. And when you're articulating for everybody else why Sierra is this big threat who needs to go, well, surely that logic applied last week as well. Like, why was that any worse of a time to take her out then?
Right. I think maybe part of the rationale might be it's probably good in general for players like Steven and Spencer and Jeremy to be propagating the idea that this is a fluid game. You don't have to be thinking concretely. You know, you can mix things up from round to round because they're probably never going to be thinking concretely themselves, and they want other people to be flexible in future rounds. That said, to accomplish that, I think the price was a bit heavy.
Well, I feel like the people that you need to convince of that already are convinced. So Kelly and Sierra, for instance, if you want to enlist them in some larger scheme, they're going to be on board with it if they feel they can get something out of that. And Abby is just off in her own world doing her own thing. But someone like Tasha or Kimmy or Keith is already loyal to you. And so if you open up the game by making loyalty essentially a non-existent thing, that only harms you, because now the people who might have been willing to fall in line behind you before are now going to explore some other options. So I don't really see the benefit in doing that.
No, I agree. I just mean, in general, I think Steven is the kind of player who does benefit from people being on, you know, people thinking in flexible terms. But I think you're absolutely right that in this case, the price that they paid, and not even that they were necessarily like exchanging their political capital to make that kind of game dynamic clear. This is just a thought I had as to what maybe went into why they decided to do that.
Yeah. It's also fun to note that we see Sierra bemoaning the fact that everyone is trapped in the shelter because of the rain, and that means she can't go off and have these private conversations with people in the way that she would need to do to get something together. But Steven actually was saying in his blog that it might have harmed him more than anybody, because he had to do some damage control after they got back. And, you know, beyond the conversations that they had immediately after that tribal, you know, he couldn't go off with Kimmy or with Tasha on the following day and really nail that down and put it in place.
They just had, like, 2.5 days or whatever to stew about how much of a weasel Steven is, basically. Yeah. Well, let's get into the conditions a bit, because as you mentioned, they weren't able to leave the shelter for what seemed like, you know, between tribal council and the following immunity challenge, where the conditions were just preposterous, constant rain. And just quickly, I'd never in my 15 years of watching the show ever even wanted to play. For the past maybe month or two, I was actually thinking about it. I've been trying to quit smoking and think of a motivator, like maybe I'll quit smoking and apply for Survivor. After seeing this episode, fucking forget it. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to put myself out. Not that they would ever pick me, but now I'm not at least going to even waste my time trying to get on the show.
I would literally die, I think. I'd be like that French guy who just couldn't hack it anymore. They would have this massive lawsuit on their hands. It would be so messy. Yeah.
Speaking of just like the conditions in general, why is Jeremy the only one out here with a hoodie? Like, I'm sure it was part of the wardrobe that they picked for him that he submitted himself. I can't think of – I'm sure there have been plenty of other – like, I think Ethan in Africa had a hoodie. And I'm sure back in the day – they used to give him like rain ponchos and shit back in the day. But it's been a long time since we've seen people with, like, really functional clothing. Although I know – I don't think it even ever made air, but Cliff Robinson – Spencer was mad about this. Cliff had, like, a full NBA warm-up suit that he got to sleep in. Like, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's saying that it's so much easier today and it's not real survival anymore. Should remember the fact that they had rain ponchos given to them back in the first season. Like, there was no real concern back then. But
sunglasses.
Right, yeah. But maybe this is like a two-season-long plan from Jeremy where he knows he's going to come back. He knows he's going to be in this tropical location during monsoon season. So in Salmon del Sur, he like packs a hoodie in his travel suit or something, and then that gets carried forward to the next season because, of course, that's Jeremy's look. He can't go without it.
Yeah, no, in the entirely fictional world where I ever did go out there, I would insist that my daily wardrobe consists of nothing but parkas and sweatpants and stuff like because I live in Maine. Like, all right.
And just to jump in, I know some people like to say that they want to see survival stuff on the show more often, but it feels like often when we do see it, it's all just them lying miserable in the shelter because they just literally can't do anything and don't have the energy to do it even if they could, as opposed to, you know, going out on this like wild adventure and foraging for berries or whatever. Like, you just don't see that side of things anymore.
Yeah, I don't even really understand why they go to places that have monsoon season, where it seems like the last thing you want when you're producing a TV show documentary style about what these people are up to off on the island is 3 days of them sitting in the shelter in a group, not even speaking, just shivering.
Right. And so I understand that the fundamental premise of Survivor is these conditions are hellish and they have to survive within that context. But it does really just, you know, if that is sapping people's energy and just rendering them unable to do anything, they're not giving you good TV material. And so you have to work that fact into the storyline somehow, where it's like, oh, you know, the conditions are awful and it's raining all the time or whatever, but that you can't really make much TV out of that, I don't think.
Well, I mean, what the hell's wrong with Samoa, where they're on a tropical island and they have plenty of fish and plenty of coconuts, and who the hell cares? Like, if they're surviving 30% less than they would be in Cambodia when they're playing, you know, on those days when they don't have monsoons, 100 times more game. Yeah. So generally speaking, I would definitely be an advocate for let's reel this back in with these conditions. I know season 32 was apparently really, really gross as well. It's also in that same location. We'll see how all of that goes. But as far as I'm concerned, they could do it in Samoa every single time. All right. So this Dom is basically the beginning of the end here for Steven, even though it's still the first episode of the two. where he gets the dreaded, now infamous confessional about feeling like he's in a good spot. And I know I shouldn't say that. Everyone who says that ends up going home. And then that confessional comes right on the heels of him saying about Joe, he's had his story. It's time. It's time for Joe to go. And everyone now at this point is just talking about how important it is that Joe doesn't win immunity. And Joe, of course, goes on to win this immunity challenge. But more interestingly, this is the challenge where they get the decision to participate or sit out and exchange their shot at immunity. And if five of them do it, then they get the hookup on a new shelter. Obviously, five, and I think, what, eight of them ended up doing it. It was only Joe and Keith who ended up participating. Obviously, a complete no-brainer here for Joe, I would say, to participate. Who else do you think has some business participating here?
I think it depends on how strongly you want Joe out this minute. If you think you can afford to wait and just take him down whenever he loses, then that's fine. And if so, then I think you just pick the White Rock with everybody else and just leave that to him. But I guess if you feel you really need to do that now, then you may as well take your 2% chance of beating Joe in a challenge or whatever it is you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is they get to look at what the challenge is. I doubt many of them. I mean, I didn't even remember watching this challenge run the first time, but in just seeing it, it definitely looks like a balance thing. And so far, Joe seems to be pretty good at these balanced challenges. So I think, first of all, if you feel like you don't have any chance of winning, obviously put the White Rock. Keith didn't surprise me that he went for the Black Rock. Like, first of all, I think he's just the kind who really wants to compete and isn't really thinking about, like, I think they all kind of understood that they were going to get the shelter hookup, and Keith just wanted to take a shot at it.
There's also the thing where if you stay in to compete with Joe, that ends up being seen as selfish somehow, where it's like, you didn't want to give us a shelter, you just wanted to compete and be the hero or whatever. And so if you think that everybody else is taking the shelter and wants everybody else to take the shelter, then you may as well join in with that and not deviate from the group.
Right, that's the thing, is you have to gauge, I'm sure in other circumstances, let's go to Exile Island where they had the eat or play thing. I'm sure everyone on Kasaya was hoping that Aris would participate so that someone could beat Terry. So maybe there is at least an argument to be made. I put the Black Rock because someone had to try to beat Joe.
Yeah, and of course Joe is going to play, and we see him offer like this explanation for it, which doesn't seem to go down all that well. Like, we see Abby rolling her eyes as she has wanted to, but also Sierra just doesn't seem to like it, and Kelly as well. I wonder.
Shocking
if
that the three in that spot don't end up liking it, by the way. Like, this is a complete no-brainer for Joe. Yeah,
but I start to wonder, is Joe actually as respected out there as we seem to be assuming he is? Now, I'm not going to go like full cause on you and say everybody should be trying to drag Joe to the end of the coat or whatever, but is he the golden boy that he's been made out to be, or is he, are there certain reservations about him within the group?
I think the question really is, when it matters, like when these considerations are coming into play about how well liked Joe is, it seems like it's got to be the case that Joe won 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 challenges for that to even come into play.
Yeah, and it's like one minor thing at the start of a challenge does not outweigh any resentment that you bear towards anybody else, and also the combined weight, of his achievement over 39 days and however many challenges.
Yeah, and Joe also, if he can get Jeremy out soon and Spencer out soon and feel really good about being able to beat, to win most of the physical challenges, he could maybe go into Ozzy mode where he doesn't even really have to. He is essentially, like we were talking about, basically off on Redemption Island, where he doesn't even have to play the social game when he has the necklace every time. He could just go with whatever's happening. And then, as a result, jurors aren't going to be holding him responsible for their boot.
Yeah, we did see Joe this episode say that now that he lost a challenge and he's eligible to be voted for the first time in 30 days, I think it is, that he would have to rely on his social game to see him through that. And we do see him survive ultimately. Was that a factor of his social game, do you think? Or was it more that, the way he fit into everybody else's plans, it just worked out that he happened to skate by this week?
Well, this one he still has the necklace, but next week he does not have the necklace when he gets, the second episode, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I think it was more specific to the situation. I think it was an incredible spot for Joe to not have the necklace, where it's these four that are really isolating themselves after that Steven reward win as a solid foursome, and then there are only five other people on the beach who have to be thinking to themselves, we've got to do something to crack this, and if that means Joe stays, then Joe stays. So I don't think it was necessarily anything phenomenal that Joe did, although I will say, it was 29 days, not 30 days, but it was day 29 was the first time he was eligible to be voted out. if Survivor runs another 30 seasons, no one will ever match that streak.
No, I think it took a long time for someone to beat Marcus's record, and Joe, I don't think, would ever be topped.
Yeah, especially as I'm anticipating, we're going to keep seeing more and more three-tribe formats. I guess that does kind of mean that you have a better shot early on at getting immunity, since two out of three get immunity. But I still feel like, in general, it's tougher to avoid immunity through all of these swaps and three-tribe things. So I think it's just going to get even tougher and tougher.
Yeah, he picked a good time to lose it as well, on the last vote where mathematically that Bion alliance could be overturned. And so, you know, if there was any chance of him staying, regardless of any other considerations, then this would be the day.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I was saying, is it's just what I would consider something that I would definitely, if I'm in, like, Spencer's spot, be trying to draw up this exact scenario, where this is what I would consider, like, a forced line, where people have no real choice except to team up and take a shot at Jeremy, Steven, Kimmy, and Tasha.
Yeah. So back to this first vote quickly. We see Spencer be fairly adamant about wanting Steven now. We never get a full explanation as to why, though, because it seemed like the two of them were working fairly closely before, and then he ends up writing Steven's name down on this first vote and then being the crucial pivot and getting him out on the second vote. So what do you think it was that really swung the dial there over the course of those few days?
Okay, I think, first of all, that when he was working closely with Jeremy and Steven, when he did flip with the Kelly Wigglesworth thing, it was not with the intention of, this is going to be my final three. Like we talked about last week, I think he went into that as, this is what I'm going to do this week, and maybe I'll work with them again, and it looks like they'd be down with that, but maybe I won't. And when I think the big sticking point for Spencer, at least in talking to him very briefly about the way this went down, is Steven said to him at some point, I don't think I can beat you in the end. And to Spencer, he, for my money, correctly did the math that also meant, I don't want to sit next to you in the end, because Steven is not going to go and voluntarily lose in the end. And that was it for Spencer. And I think Spencer was probably under the assumption that Steven was feeling the exact same way, that, hey, we're going to work together if we can, and if we go out there and we're on the same starting tribe, we're going to definitely try to go pillar to post. Maybe, or may not go pillar to post. They were not on the same starting tribe, and I don't think Spencer, for one, ever got over that. And maybe Steven did, and I think that may have been his downfall.
Yeah, but that cannot have been a revelation to Spencer, though. He must have known that Steven was never planning to take him all the way to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly hope that he would not be thinking that Steven was someone he wanted to be trusting the whole time. And from just talking to him a little bit pregame, I know that was not the case, that he was not going out there thinking that Steven was someone who was going to completely have his back, although he was definitely someone that he really strongly was hoping to work with.
Yeah, it must have been strange, though, when the two of you start on opposite tribes, and then when you do finally meet up with Steven, he's as part of, like, this wider Bion alliance where it just has no real place for you. And even though Jeremy was willing to kind of take him under his wing and try to move him up the power structure there, he must have known that there was never any long-term thing between himself and Andrew Savage, let's say, or between himself and Kimmy, or some of the other people who are firmly enmeshed in this Bion brotherhood or whatever. And so they
brotherhood
kind of started...
is actually the correct pronunciation.
What?
Brotherhood? Like bros? Nailed it?
Oh, sure.
Boom.
I gave that like a C+, maybe a C. So, yeah, I imagine he wanted to work with Steven, but even when that opportunity came, it must have been kind of tentative. Well, you know that Steven has other things going on. He doesn't need you to stay in the game. So even when the two of you do end up working together, firstly, you know that Steven has other options, whereas you don't really at that point. And so it's always like this imbalance of power there. And also, even if you do end up being Steven's closest ally long term, he's perfectly willing to cut you towards the end if he feels he needs to. And he probably will, given that Spencer does seem to be a popular person who would make many of the same arguments as Steven were they to make it to the end together.
Yeah, I mean, I think entering the season, it was extraordinarily likely that Spencer and Steven, if they ever had the chance, would wind up wanting to and going through with working together. I think it is nearly impossible that they ever would have wound up in the end together. And I think the really telling thing for me is this quote, and I wrote it down, where when Spencer is trying to pitch to Jeremy why Steven has to go, he says, if Steven has a chance to make a move, he will. And I think that is what was constantly at the back of Spencer's mind. And he goes on to say, I'm not comfortable with Steven in this game. Steven, who has an advantage. Steven, who's closer with Kimmy, you know, we talked about this, than any other two people. Steven, who could easily flip on us. I think Spencer, and I think this is a very, very good and healthy impulse on Spencer's part. was wary of Steven. He knows that Steven is in there for first place and first place only, and he can't count on Steven for any length of real time.
Okay, so two questions I would have here. The first is, if you're making this move because it's mathematically necessary, because you fear that Steven is going to go back with Jeremy and the two of them will go back with Kimmy and Tasha, then if Steven's making a move against his group, it's going to be to your benefit, most likely, right? Like, it's going to be moving away from something which you had no part in to begin with. And then secondly, if everybody knows that Steven's willing to make a move and that everybody is wanting to vote him out, then surely he doesn't have any real power to actually make a move when he comes up with some plan. And so if something is going to go down because of Steven, it's going to be because everybody else was willing to go along with it and not because he, like, somehow enraptured them into falling into line.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Steven really did have less power because, like, I think you're absolutely on to something that probably most people out there were pretty wary of Steven. I would guess, though, and hey, Dom, I know I'm saying this completely, even though it's completely unsubstantiated, I think Kimmy probably had a lot of faith in Steven. I think Jeremy, you know, you don't idle someone in that spot that's that big of a gamer and that big of a threat unless you feel really good about them. So I think Steven was definitely doing something right. But I think you are right that, hey, if Steven does want to mix it up, I would be probably the person he'd be coming to. I think what Spencer was probably concerned about is I'm not going to be the guy who feels really good about Steven and then gets taken out in fourth or fifth place.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is if somebody's a big physical threat, then that's not going to change unless, you know, assuming the challenges are broadly the same as they have been, then they're going to keep winning or keep coming close to winning. And so you have to nip that in the bud. And if someone's a big social threat so that they would win if they get to the end, then unless they take some massive heel turn for some reason, then that's going to remain true as well. But for someone to be a strategic threat, then that relies on them being able to convince other people to do what they want. And if you already have everyone on board with voting them out, then that doesn't seem to be true anymore. So you get this like weird tension where the reason for wanting to vote someone out doesn't actually exist anymore as soon as you have people who are willing to vote them out, if that makes sense.
Well, I feel like just in the moment here, if you are... it's Spencer in this case, and you feel like if Steven goes, the game's going to crack wide open, and you're going to be in a great spot with your hand in a lot of jars and a lot of people feeling probably pretty good about you. Aren't you going to be thinking to yourself, not, oh, that's just Steven, this alleged strategic threat who's never been able to convince anyone of anything. I'm going to be thinking, that's Steven who crushed an entire season before, and I'm not going to let that happen again.
Yeah, I would be, although it's... and maybe this is just the edit building up this certain perception of Steven that they're trying to convey, but it seemed like he was not as, like, no one was buying into the Fishback mythology out there, right? Like, it's, you know, we like Steven, we want to work with him for now, but we know that he's shady, we know he's up to stuff, and if he does come to you with an idea, you have to question it and see if the assumptions match what you've seen yourself. And so I don't think Steven was, like, beguiling people into doing what he wants. It's more a case of, well, what Steven wants aligns with what I want for now, but that might not always be the case in the future.
Yeah. Okay, well, this...
Lest it sound like I'm just bagging on Steven here, like, clearly Jeremy was so convinced that Steven would be willing to go all the way with him that he gave him the idol, he exposed his own position and so on in order to keep him in the game. And so that shows that he's doing something right, even as everybody else... was wanting to vote him out.
Yeah, let's get into that. And as I just said, like, I don't feel like you're idling someone that you don't feel like is going to totally have your back going forward and do really good stuff for you in the game.
See, here's the thing, though, and to get into the arguments for and against this now, like, Jeremy can say, okay, I gave Steve my idol as, you know, that's an incredible token of generosity, and so moving forward, he is going to be with me till the very end. But in doing that, you confirm that Steven cannot possibly take you to the end, because there is now no way he can win if he goes to the end with you, because Steven can't make the argument that, oh, I was a physical threat, I won the challenges, or I was a social threat, or, you know, I have a pregnant wife back at home who I need to give the money to. Like, Steven's only argument is, I played the game by whatever definition you want to use for that, better than the other two people sitting next to me did. And if he goes to the end with Jeremy, Jeremy could just instantly tear that down with one simple line. He can just say, well, you would not be in the game anymore if I hadn't saved you using the idol which you didn't even know about. And
yeah.
That is fatal. Like, there's no way you can move past that. And so that basically ensures that Steven, if he has any hope of winning, cannot take Jeremy to the end. And so it is very self-defeating in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jeremy would probably be thinking, like, hey, I'm going to idle Steven, and then we're both going to be safe, and we're going to trust each other the whole way and go and sit at Final Tribal Council, and then I'm going to beat him because he's only here because I used my idol to save him, and I'm going to win $1 million. I think, first of all, Steven's obviously not going to be oblivious to that, and I don't think Steven probably would have been interested in sitting next to Jeremy in the finals after Jeremy idled him, although maybe we can find out later on, or maybe he's been talking about it in exit press. More to the point, I think when you have two idols, that is an accomplishment by itself that is going to get you probably a ton of jury favor in general. And I would be using those two idols to try to make like big dynamic moves, particularly to save myself. But like, I think there is a lot of value in idols with the jury, like Natalie Anderson style, where you can really demonstrate that you are taking sole control over something.
Yeah, although I think Jeremy, if he was able to make it to the end, would have a good argument in those terms against anybody, regardless of how or if he used his idols. Like, if he didn't have to use them, that would be a good argument in and of itself. Like, he could say, I found two idols, I kept them a secret from everybody, and I was never in danger so that I had to use them. Like, that by itself is a good thing to have on your resume. We also saw Sierra, when she was making her case a few episodes ago, say, if you let Jeremy get to the end, he's going to win this game. And that was actually the only time so far I think we've heard anybody draw attention to Jeremy as the one who's being in control, and yet clearly the people who are perceptive and who are trying to stir things up seem to think that that's the way to go. And so if Jeremy gets to the end, he has a very good case to make of saying, I was the one controlling the game from the shadows, none of you ever made a move against me, and I was the one person directing everything without anyone even having an idea. And I don't see who could really argue against that or how they could argue against that.
Yeah, I was someone who I think was higher than most people on Jeremy entering the season, but I definitely did not see this kind of social prowess coming, to say the least. I think you're absolutely right. It seems like no one's really been targeting Jeremy at all to speak of. Like, the one time he's been in danger was when his ally was in danger. I do disagree with him using his idol on Steven, but other than that, I think he's playing a really, really strong game.
Yeah, not a great week for Jeremy. Like, using one of his idols, exposing his position and really, like, drawing a line in the sand here, and then being on the wrong side of that second vote after saving the victim of that vote the week before. But even though his position right now may be a bit more precarious, I think if he gets to the end, they won't hold that against him, because given the way that the game is playing with all of these voting blocks or whatever, and I really hope I never have to hear that phrase again, with all of these, like, dynamic power structures, as Stephen would say, or whatever you want to call it, like, no one is going to be able to get to the end and say that they played a flawless game and they were in control and they were on the right side of every single vote. And that's a great thing. It means the game is more and more resembling the genius, and that's absolutely what I want to see. But for Jeremy's sake, it means he can afford to have one bad week, as long as it doesn't lead to him getting voted out, because he can easily be in control again in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, and hey, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world that Jeremy suddenly looks like his position is crumbling. Everyone else is suddenly like, oh, hey, we can let Jeremy slide for a little while now.
Yeah, or even, like, okay, he's used one idol. Surely he mustn't have another, and we can vote him out whenever we want to. So that could be, if everyone is basing their assumptions on, oh, we can just vote Jeremy out whenever we want, that, you know, they could get a rude awakening at some point. This does mean that Jeremy no longer has any room for error, so he doesn't have that idol in his back pocket. He can't afford to burn one and then maybe use one later at a correct time. He basically has to get it right the next time he uses it. But if he can do that, and I see no reason why he can't, then he could really surprise some people when that happens.
Yeah, and might I add, another idol play that was only successful because he did not tell anyone that the idol existed. I'm guessing he will not tell anyone about the other one either. Yes. So definitely really curious to see how all that plays out with Jeremy in particular, just because it really does look like at this point that he's getting a pretty overwhelming winner's edit, but his position really he does seem to be like backed up against the wall. So it's really, really going to be interesting to see how he gets out of that corner potentially.
Yeah. Are we on the same page, though, that we don't think that this was a good move for him at all?
No, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems to me like I understand the virtue of keeping someone in the game who has proven his loyalty to you, although, as we said, that can only last for so long, and towards the end is when you really need that loyalty anyway. Like, if Jeremy goes out in fourth because Steven turns on him, well, okay, I guess fourth is better than eighth or something, but not much in terms of actually winning the game. And in return, you have exposed just how tight you are with Steven. You put yourself on the wrong side of a vote, and even though you might end up winning that particular vote, that's never really a good thing to do. And it doesn't seem like saving Steven would give you the numbers advantage going forward. Unless, I guess, maybe if Jeremy already knew what Steven's advantage was, and he thought that, okay, if I have Steven, we can pick up Tasha and Kimmy, and then with Steven's advantage, we can just overwhelm the majority on the next vote.
Well, it seems like he clearly didn't, though. It seems like he told him the following round. And also, even I still think it's pretty thin, even with knowing the advantage. Like, if your concern is, I need to idle Steven because we're being viewed as too powerful of a duo, using an idol to leave Steven in the game is not the way to remove the target from your back.
And I do get the concern that if you allow yourself to go along with this, then you lose a lot of the power that you had, because not only has your closest ally left the game, but you weren't able to keep them in there. So clearly you don't have that much influence over the wider group. But at the same time, you're casting yourself in opposition to that group by doing this, and I just don't see the payoff here. Like, if you keep the idols, nobody knows that you have them. You have two of them, so if you do need to just make a run as a lone wolf, you can probably try and do that, especially after Joe is gone. And you can kind of blend seamlessly into whatever the other group is doing. So if Tasha and Kimmy want to do something, that's fine. If Spencer wants to do something, that's fine. But also if, you know, Kelly and Sierra offer you something that maybe seems tempting, you can jump on board with that too. So I think actually having Steven leave the game when he is one of the more active schemers might be the best thing that happens to you, because you're no longer tied to someone who everybody else is seeing as untrustworthy.
Right. I mean, it definitely at least sounds to me like I would rather be kind of a wild card free agent that just that, you know, is being viewed as someone who just lost his closest ally with two unknown idols in my pocket than part of a power duo that everyone's coming after with one idol.
Yeah, I guess the parallel might be with Malcolm and Karen Moen, where it's like either I can keep I can keep both of the idols that I have and try to just make a run by myself, or I can use them in this ambitious play to try and flip the vote and get the majority on my side. And I think the big difference there is this game has proven to be a lot more fluid than that one did, where in that game there weren't really any big power shifts until the majority alliance was just down to itself. Whereas here, it seems like every single vote, there's something new and crazy happening. And also, Jeremy here comes into this in a good position where he doesn't need to mix things up in order to have a good shot going forward. Whereas Malcolm was basically at death's door, and if he didn't do something that round, then it was, you know, even if he survived for that round, all of his influence, as little as it was, would have been gone. So,
yeah. I mean, if you're Jeremy, if you just let Steven go, you've still got Joe, Spencer, Wentworth is probably starting to get viewed as a bigger and bigger threat as time passes. You can probably sell it. Yeah.
And Tasha won three challenges in her first season, and Sierra still is like this big concern for everybody. So it seems like Jeremy could even fly under the radar, as strange as that sounds to say.
That's what I'm saying. I was listening to Koss on the reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar this week, and he was saying, you know, it's not about controlling the entire game. It's about controlling the end of the game. And if you are the free agent with good bonds with people and two idols that no one knows about, that seems like a pretty good spot to be in for controlling the end of the game.
Yeah, you want to control the final outcome, but you don't always need to control the process by which that happens. So you don't need to be the one directing every single vote, as long as the votes actually do go the way you want. And you could, in theory, change it if it wasn't going well for you.
Right. And I know I always use this example, and it's because I love him and I think he's an amazing player. But Andy Heron, I think, in Big Brother was great at this, where, like, there are plenty of spots where the right move is take your foot off the gas pedal. I don't care who leaves, as long as it's not someone, you know, as long as it's within these parameters that because I've been playing well are in place. I don't care which of these people it is. You guys make it up, and I won't look like a threat or a decision maker.
I love that you had to stop yourself from almost giving credit to Sandra there for something. But, good save, though.
Sandra didn't even cross my mind. But my point was, obviously, Andy Heron, a player that talented, would care if it was someone he was banking on. Like, he obviously did care when it looked like Amanda might leave early on, and he got the house to flip and keep Amanda. Like, that's a time where you put your foot on the gas pedal, but there are plenty of times where you can leave it up to other people, and it's just going to be better for you in the long run. All right. Let's give some parting thoughts, I guess, now on Sierra here, Dom. Obviously, by the way, congratulations on your victory. I'm guessing I will not be winning this bet. Dom and I, of course, made a bet at the beginning of the season, the number of times that Sierra voting out her own mom would come up. I took the over on 6.5. The final line, we still have the reunion, I guess, to go, where we can maybe get 3 or 4 in there if Jeff's really on his game. The final line so far, though, is still 1.
Yeah, it was looking dicey after the first episode, maybe, where we had this mention early on, as we expected. Since then, we have had I would say a good 6 hours of screen time elapsed in which not one single mention of that has come up. And so unless the reunion is some feature-length film on the Moret family and its various inner turmoil, I don't think that that's going to be in question here.
Yeah. By the way, Laura Moret running for public office. You endorsing
her? Yes. I don't know how much weight my endorsement would carry, but yeah, sure, why not?
I will not be endorsing her. I will actually go out of my way and say, if you live in her constituency, please do not vote for Laura Moret. Yeah, all right. Anyway, on to her daughter, on to Sierra. Sierra, I thought she really did, like, she was fun to watch this season. That being said, I think it was just I had much higher expectations for Sierra. I really was anticipating her being around for a while, which I guess she kind of was. But I thought she would just be a bigger character, and maybe that was unfair of me. Maybe that was just purely based on her being such a big character her first time, and because of the role that she ended up playing here and being kind of an early jury boot, that was not going to be in the cards. But still a bit of a letdown for me, although at the end of the day, really, really glad to have gotten to see Sierra for her second time. Although, I'll put it this way, I think it's just her second time so far.
Interesting. I think a big part of your disappointment is the editors deciding to give her the Brenda Lowe treatment, which I know you were very happy when it was applied to Brenda, but in Sierra's case, it just didn't seem remotely warranted.
It was there for like, she was visible these last few episodes. Like, since the merge, she's been around.
Yeah, but for the first half of the season, she was basically a non-entity, and I don't think she needed to be, and I don't think she was based on the underlying facts of the game at that time.
Right, but I think that's just like an unfortunate byproduct of a season with this much action and this many big characters and advantages and idols and crazy things like that going around and all these swaps that even people like Sierra are liable to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, I was expecting basically what we got from Sierra, but not for as long as we got it for, and so I guess that was a pleasant surprise, but yeah, not too much to say beyond that, I think.
Yeah, good stuff from Sierra. As I alluded to, I think I would probably bet at even money that we do see Sierra back someday.
Yeah, I think an excellent casting choice the first time around as well, as someone who, you know, gives a good confessional, is always willing to get in there and mix things up and do her best to fight for what she wants. And I, you know, in terms of especially the women, where they just don't pay attention to that a lot of the time, and it's more about, oh, we have the male cast we want, so let's just throw a few people in there to make up the numbers. I'm glad that we have someone like Sierra who can really just carry that aspect of the game by herself.
Yeah, I mean, Sierra, as part of the long list of people on this season, zero complaints as far as casting her on the show. She's exactly what I want on the show. I would love to have someone like Sierra on every single season. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like the young girls they tend to cast are typically in that mold. But hopefully that's all going to change soon. All right. Should they have been going here for Wentworth instead of Sierra, in your opinion, Dom?
Yeah, that's what confuses me, because for as much as we talk about Jeremy and Spencer blending back in after they kind of put themselves out there, it seems like Wentworth as well has not heard her name come up over the past few weeks either.
It's crazy to me. And I mean, I honestly feel like it's at least arguable that Kelly Wentworth is playing the best game this season.
Yeah, although in this season in particular, I don't know how you would even begin to assess or quantify that. Well, like, is she playing better than Joe or Spencer or Jeremy? Like, maybe. I don't even know how you would go about answering that question.
At least for me, the way I would look at it is the people whose positions I would want to swap in for with their own faculties. And to me, those are Wentworth and Spencer at this point, a.k.a. Spentworth. Is that a thing? Is Spentworth a thing yet?
If you try hard enough, it might be.
Hashtag Spentworth. Let's get it going. But I think
hashtag that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I feel like they just have a ton of flexibility and a ton of good bonds, and they're people that are probably not being targeted in the near future, although maybe that's going to change. Like, it's really, really tough to project even one round in advance, and I love it about this season. But that being said, I just feel like they are in the spots that I would most want to be in because of the work that they have done to put themselves there. Wentworth, by the way, has another idol, which we'll be getting to. I just feel like there's plenty to be happy about if you're Wentworth or Spencer here.
Yeah, and that second idol, I think even more so than Jeremy's, might end up really throwing a wrench in some people's plans, because it might be like, okay, we have a week where we're doing nothing else, and Wentworth is clearly the biggest threat outside of our own alliance, so let's just take her out. And then if you can't get her out that week, suddenly all hell could break loose, because now maybe you're two or three votes away from the end, and Joe is still there, or Spencer is still there, or Jeremy is still there. And as soon as they lose a challenge, you have to take them out. So if that then happens, she gets a slide by for yet another round, at which point she's only one or two votes away from the end, and that could really just throw everything out of kilter.
With a bunch of presumably locked votes in there on the jury, I think it's within the realm of possibility that we see them not split the vote on Wentworth again, and she's able to idle her, so, like, her one vote against someone is what it would manages to take Kimmy out or whatever.
Yeah, I love it. Given that the whole discussion about splitting votes has become so routine at this point, that when they don't split votes, it comes back to bite them. And then when they do split votes, it also comes back to bite them. So there's no, like, standardized play this season that ends up just working as intended.
There's no way to win with splitting votes or not splitting votes. Yeah. All right. So let's get into part two, episode two here, I guess. Dom, let's start with the nighttime reward challenge. I know we don't normally get too much into challenges, but I love seeing this. This came out of nowhere, first of all. It's the Rudy Bosch Memorial I Don't Know Challenge, where Jeff's going to tell him a story, and they're going to run around and get these gold medallions. The first one to get all five wins individual reward. Now, Dom, it's been a long time since we've talked about individual rewards.
Yeah, just to chime in, I love nighttime challenges as well, and so often we see these daytime challenges where clearly so much effort has gone into their construction, and you just have like these massive, amazing contraptions out there, but they still don't have like this epic feel because it's just yet another challenge, and we're used to that by now. But a challenge like this is so atmospheric just because it's at night and there are a few torches lying around, and that seems like it's fairly easy to replicate, so I'm surprised we don't get this more frequently.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, didn't we get one in Blood versus Water, the first one? There may have even, I have a bad memory at this point when it comes to Survivor.
Yeah, I guess logistically with the cameras or something it might be difficult, but I'm not the person to ask about that.
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that, but I definitely do love it. And as I alluded to, Dom, we are playing an individual reward challenge here. I know that if we've even done season, we haven't had many of these on recent seasons, but we are definitely from the school of thought that there is virtually never a reason to be winning these individual reward challenges, because in winning, you are going to then have to select people to go with you. That is always going to be a minority of the group, typically a big, you know, a very small minority of the group, and you're really going to isolate yourselves.
Yeah, so Stephen here makes what I think a lot of Survivor fans and pundits would consider the most basic Survivor mistake, where he wins the reward and then has to choose people to take with him, and maybe, depending on what you believe, makes that decision poorly. But this is actually entirely consistent with what he's been saying about the type of challenge all along now, where it seems very obvious to not take your allies with you and to take the people who are maybe on the fringes, but when you keep doing that, eventually the people who are your allies just aren't your allies anymore, because you haven't given them that constant validation and reinforcement that you need to in order to keep them on board. And also, we keep talking about how Steven is like scarred by the legacy of JT back in Token Machines. And one thing he said a few episodes ago that I think plays into this here is JT won that season on the reward because he was able to have such a great time with Brendan that then Brendan devoted his entire efforts within the game to making JT win. And even though Brendan was booted pretty soon after that, that kind of carried forward to everybody else. So then Sierra loved JT and Debbie loved JT and so on and so forth. And it was so hard for him to overcome that. And so I don't think Stephen is trying to replicate that himself. Like, Stephen will not have Keith, like, you know, praying for Stephen to win the game based on some reward challenge. But if he's able to at least have those conversations and to at least stop other people from having that same conversation, then that's one fear that he no longer has to worry about.
Yeah. I mean, the big concern is obviously that it's three of you going and however many, six of you staying back at camp. And like you've been saying, Steven has constantly preached that, hey, if you don't show your allies that they're your closest allies, then they're not going to be your closest allies. But the problem is Spencer knows that too. And after Spencer sees that he ends up taking Jeremy and Tasha, from this point forward, Spencer seems completely done with it. Like, there's actually a quote in here where he says, right at the beginning, he says, I'm pretty sure I'm being lied to. And maybe it makes sense to jump ship and start something new.
Yeah, although that seemed kind of puzzling to me, because surely the fact that you voted against Steven at the last tribal would be as good an indication as any that maybe there's something that needs to be repaired there between the two of you. Not the fact that Steven failed to take you on reward when he could only take two people, and where his choices would seem fairly obvious.
Well, if you're...
And where also Steven has said, like, Spencer is rational enough to not take that kind of thing seriously, so why not leave him back at camp where that's not going to be an issue, and take the people who I do need to paper things over with emotionally. But like, if anything, that's a compliment to Spencer, not an insult.
But isn't that like the conventional logic for why people originally were not taking the closest members of their alliance? Because, hey, they'll get over it. They're my closest allies. Like, isn't this kind of just becoming circular?
I guess, but like, in terms of a concrete indication that something is wrong, I would think the fact that you just voted against him would be a much bigger sign than him not taking you for a challenge.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't even understand. They didn't really seem to go into much detail about how Steven responded to Spencer, in particular, turning on him the previous round, because the next thing we see about him is him telling Spencer about the advantage.
Yeah, and then later on, when Spencer flips and blindsides him, it's like, oh, well, I never really could have seen that coming. We were so close. We were friends outside of the game and so on. Where it's like, did the two of you just not... It was almost like the previous week just hadn't happened at all.
Yeah, it was weird.
I'm going to be curious to hear about that from the two of them when we get that chance. But yeah, it's like, this is a crucial point in the game. Steven has to rely on Spencer's trust, but how can he even do that when Spencer was leading the charge to get him out the week before? And even if you don't know what his role is in that, you know that he wrote your name down, and there's no good reason why he would do that. So I don't get it.
Well,
it
seems I feel like it's kind of the mark of good players that one round after Spencer had essentially kind of like shanked Steven, Steven was willing to get over it, and Spencer was ostensibly willing to go back and work with Steven again. Like, I think that is something that, as we continue to see the evolution of Survivor, we're going to see more and more of, is people forgiving more quickly.
Oh, and I don't mean to take anything away from Spencer, who I think played that very well indeed, but this is him doing what he said he would do, is making these bonds with people and using those to leave them in the dark while he makes his own moves. And so you think they would emphasize that and frame it in those terms, but they really don't. And also, then they don't give us how Spencer was able to get Steven's trust again after he just voted for him the night before. Like, you would think that would be an important thing to show, but they just don't bother with it at all.
It is weird. It's almost like they expect you to think, oh, well, you know, that whole betrayal just happened 45 minutes ago, but I've reset into last week mode again. I'm already back to Spencer and Steven being together.
Yeah, like, it's voting blocks now. It's a whole new game. It's an evolution of strategy. Like, all the old rules are being thrown out the window. And we're supposed to buy into that, but they don't really make it easy for us.
Yeah. I mean, I really do think it's a really tough ask of these editors to be painting, like, complete narratives that flow from start to finish when so much is going on.
I don't think it is. When they have done it in the past, in previous seasons, when there has been less going on, and where there was less to work with in terms of building those narratives. And then also when other shows are able to do it without some of the privileges the Survivor editing team does seem to have. So, I don't know. I think they could do it if they put their minds to it, but they also have to juggle that with how do we put something out there which the casual audience will look at and appreciate and not really have to focus on in order to follow, clearly.
Well, and also they have to juggle that with not only how do we tell a story that's going to make sense for this episode, but we have a season-long narrative to be working out here, too. Like, I think, like, there are just so many contributing factors that have to go in. Challenges are going to eat up at least 10 minutes of every episode. Tribal Council is going to be 5-7 minutes. Like, they have very little time to work with.
I guess, but then you get to make those choices of those interchangeable confessionals, like, who do you give those to, and when do you give them, and what are they about?
Yeah, so going back to the challenge, actually, Kelly Wentworth, that idol that we alluded to, she got that clue to the idol because she just happened to be the first one to the right station and pick the right answer. What did you make of that? What do you make of just, you know, we've seen it on rewards, like, whoever digs their hand into the coffee beans gets the clue or whatever. What do you make of it literally just being first one to show up gets it?
I don't really like it. I think in the spirit of the other idols at challenges this season, I would rather have it be attached to, like, the urn or attached to, like, some part of the challenge, so that if someone spies it and is able to get it without being seen, then that's their prize for doing that, as opposed to I was the first one to put my hand in the bowl, and now that's just the luck of the draw, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some argument to be made for when we, you know, when we hide them at camp, we get all of these just, you know, for the most part, just like alpha males running off and finding all of them. Obviously not across the board, but generally speaking. And this is a really good way to mix it up so that Keith Nail can get an idol just by virtue of showing up and picking right. That being said, I didn't really find it that thrilling when Ralph had the idol. Like, I don't think it's going to be a lot of excitement. Like, I think the idol being hidden and having to be worked for is, you know, you eliminate a lot of the players who would be boring with an idol by making them work for it. So Wentworth, you know, they're off on reward. Wentworth wants to find this new idol under the camp. Abby won't leave. Abby eventually does leave. Very, you know, pretty cut and dry here. Anything to add on this other than just congratulations, Kelly Wentworth, on cementing your place as the second best Survivor player of all time?
No, that pretty much sums it up for me.
Okay. One random thing while off on the reward where Steven tells Tasha and Jeremy about the details of his advantage, and he goes on to later tell Spencer about it, unlike the people who have been correctly keeping their idols to themselves this season. He calls it a three-vote swing, which, what am I missing? Where it seems like it going from a vote against your side to a vote for your side is just a two-vote swing, at least by my math. But I who knows about that? So, meanwhile, back at camp, everyone is nervous about those three off on the reward challenge. Naturally so, and that is why you never win individual reward challenges. People are nervous about them getting back together with Kimmy. And then, of course, you know, if we let all four of them make it to the next round, they can at least force a tie from there. So we get this group of five now, of Wentworth, Abby, Joe, Keith, and Spencer. And this is going to be our new voting block for the round.
Yeah, also, this was not a good episode for Steven overall, but him faking out Abby at that challenge was one of the highlights for me.
Yeah.
But in any case, we move on to the immunity now, which is the Baylor Wilson Memorial Foot Fetish Challenge. And Joe finally loses one. He will not complete that 500-row streak, which so many of the elite challenge players in the past have been able to complete. And it looks like he's going to be in danger here. And for Joe, after 29 days of absolute immunity, this has to be completely terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, that's a Joe this whole time when the voting block was kind of forming around him and he was thinking, oh, you know, hey, maybe this will actually go through. I'm not certain, but I would be floored if Joe, in the back of his mind at least, was always nervous the entire time that this is, you know, the joke is on me and I'm just getting completely set up. Yeah, like, he has to be. He's smart to be, by the way.
Yeah, we did say a week or two ago that if you're going to move against someone that you think has an idol, the moment that Joe is vulnerable for the first time might be the perfect spot to do that. Now, as it turns out, Jeremy played his idol, and so I think he's not going to be on people's radar in those terms anymore. But for someone who might want to shake the game up and make an unexpected move, this seemed like the perfect time to do it, especially when you know that Joe is going to be desperate to do anything he can to stay, and so you have his vote there if you want it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier about Joe basically being, and you actually said this a couple weeks ago, where like Joe's playing a different game where it's part one, can I win the immunity challenge? And if not, then I need to figure out what I have to do. And we're really seeing that come in here. And I just really can't stress enough. I feel like, you know, the question will come up of how much did Joe really have to do with being able to survive without the necklace. I think he really would have had a hard time drawing up a better set of circumstances to be plopped into to get through a round without a necklace.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those circumstances then, because we see Steven hatching this plan to split the votes between Joe and Abby in case Joe has the idol, which a lot of people have criticized him for and have just said, well, surely you would just pile all the votes on Abby, or you must have known that Joe can't have had an idol, and so on and so forth. But the logic as he presented it makes sense, and like you can understand why he felt the need to do that and why he trusted Spencer and so on. I think that's a much more defensible move to make, even if it does end up being wrong, than the Wigglesworth vote out last week, which still doesn't make any sense to me. And hopefully when we talk to Stephen, it will start to make sense. But even then, I'm not sure I'll be able to buy into it fully.
Yeah. I mean, I understand Stephen wanting to, you know, first of all, accepting his spot in the game, which is, you know, there's nothing I can do about the way people are going to view me. You know, he doesn't care about anything other than getting first place or first place only. I get why he would probably go in there planning to play a bit more aggressively, if not drastically more aggressively, than most other players. Like, so with that in mind, I kind of understand, like, wanting to make that big move and, like, open the game up, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it just feels like you will have your chance to make your move if you want to. It doesn't have to be now, and it doesn't have to be against Wigglesworth of all people when you're leaving in the game Kelly Wentworth, Sierra, Spencer, Jeremy. You know, all of these people who could very easily turn things against you if they don't like the outcome here.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, regarding splitting the vote and if that's too cute or fancy or whatever you want to call it, if I'm Steven, like, I'm probably going to go, like, commit to whatever move I am committing to. And by which I mean, I don't mean pile on all the votes. I mean, whatever my game plan is my game plan. And if it backfires, it was going to backfire on me in a couple rounds at best anyway. So I might as well go for it.
Well, was it, though? Like, this seems like a more mathematical thing where if you get it right versus getting it wrong, that is a big difference. And you can go from being in a good position to a very bad position, depending on if you're able to execute this properly.
I guess, but it still seems to me, at least, like even if Steven had made it out of this round and he did correctly pile his votes on Abby and Abby leaves, that group is still, you know, Spencer is still not suddenly thinking, oh, Steven now suddenly must want to sit next to me.
Well, that's a very fatalistic way to think about it. Like, oh, well, nothing I could do would ever matter. So, you know, whatever. I was going to lose regardless. You know, why did I even show up? Like, but you have to.
What I'm saying is, if that is the case, and there's nothing you can do about it, you know, either that is or is not the case, you might as well put yourself in the best position if that is not the case. Because if it is the case, there's nothing you can do either way.
Right, but the question is, what is the best move to make if that is not the case? And it's unclear whether it's splitting the votes or not splitting the votes. And, you know, like, let's say Joe does have the idol, and that would make sense given everything you've seen so far. Then if you just don't play around that and you are the victim of it, you're going to be kicking yourself for the rest of your life thinking, if I had just made the obvious play and not walked into the idol that I saw coming, that I thought that he had, then I could have been sitting pretty right then. But yeah. Instead, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you may find that Stephen may be kicking himself for quite a while after taking the less obvious play.
Yeah, but let's get into that, because the big fear here is that Joe is going to have an idol. And you would think the first time that he is vulnerable, he's going to play it. And this is the first time that he's vulnerable because he's been immune for the first 29 days. So even if he had wanted to play it in the past, there was no conceivable point at which he would have had to do so.
Right.
And so if he had found it at any point in the past month, then yeah, he would still have it, and I imagine he would use it here. So it's a very sensible thing to be thinking about. The question is, if he does have it, how can you actually play around it? And do you just like pile all the votes on Abby just in case, or is it so important to get him out if he doesn't have it that you need to have the majority of votes on him to begin with?
It really, really depends on how confident you feel about people. And I think that's, I mean, obviously what it came down to for Steven is, you know, Rob does that podcast every week about why X lost Survivor. This is going to be the shortest one ever. He lost Survivor because he trusted Spencer. And I feel like if you do have full trust in Spencer, even if it's wrong, then yeah, maybe there is some merit in splitting the votes, like getting Joe out. So he does, you know, removing the risk of him running the table is probably a plus EV move. If not now, then sometime very, very soon. At the same time, that requires a ton of confidence. And if I'm not fully confident, I think you have to pile your votes on Abby.
Yeah, you said something about it depends how confident you are in people. And that is basically Survivor summed up in one sentence, right? Like it's that is the fundamental part of it. And we saw Steven say, I think on Twitter, that for all of this stuff in the early part of the season about new school versus old school, despite being a new school player, he made the most old school mistake you can make, which is I trusted the wrong person at the wrong time and I got complacent and I, you know, I maybe did something that I shouldn't have done. And that's what it comes down to. It's not, you know, I made this brilliant move and it misfired. It's I made that move because I was confident in someone and it turns out that confidence was misplaced.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not advocating for playing Survivor and never fully trusting anyone. Under, you know, outside of like a blood versus water situation or anything crazy like that. But I do recognize that, like, obviously to succeed in the game, you're going to have to put your trust in some people from time to time, if not very regularly. And like, close bonds are often what makes for really good Survivor play. So I think that's probably just what Steven had in mind, is like, I have to get people on my side one way or the other.
Yeah. He also said that after Wentworth played her idol, everybody started getting paranoid about, okay, where are the other idols? Are they all accounted for? Are there any new ones in the game that we don't know about? Like, who would conceivably have them if they did? So, for instance, was there an idol on Anchor that was never found or has not been revealed yet? And if so, like, could Sarah have had that and just not played it? Maybe Tasha found it. You know, maybe Abby found it and has somehow been able to conceal it the entire time. Like, there are lots of different ways this could go. And so one thing I asked Steven after the episode was, the idol that Jeremy plays on you, did he say where he found that? And he said it was the original Bion idol, or that was his understanding. And so for Joe to find his, let's see. So he was on Bion at first, so Jeremy would have found that one. And then when he moved to Takeo, I guess the question would be, when did Wentworth find hers?
And she hasn't told anyone that we know of. She when they were asking about when and where she got it, she didn't say anything.
Yeah, so unless, like, maybe there was one at the merge that she found.
Right.
But the original Takeo one was found by Joe in the however many days he was there, and then, you know.
Right. I mean, I mentioned this offhand last week, and I never thought it would come up again. But I remember, you know, after Wentworth played her idol, I asked Spencer who he thought had the idols prior to seeing her play it. And I said he thought Joe having both of them was his best bet prior to that. So I think that was definitely still a lingering concern for a lot of people is, hey, if Joe had that one, they still haven't seen Jeremy play the other one. They don't know yet.
Yeah, so I don't think this was just
Steve. Oh, no, they have seen Jeremy play the other one. So it must have been the other way around. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't think this is just Stephen getting paranoid about this obscure corner case scenario. This is something that everybody was worried about. And you know that Joe has been gunning for you, Stephen. So if he does play the idol and you have a bunch of votes coming your way, you're done. You're out of the game. And so it makes sense to hedge against that possibility if you can.
Yeah, that's actually another really good point that I hadn't considered. And it seems like the concern about Joe having the idol is obviously the big factor in whether or not to split. And I think that actually makes a lot of sense. I think going on to Abby, especially when you're stealing, you know you're taking Joe's vote. I guess it could be anyone's from that group. So I think we're definitely on board with probably pile your votes. Although maybe we're just saying that because we saw what happened when he didn't, but I don't know.
Well, I'm saying it makes sense to do what he did, I think.
Oh, you're saying split him?
Yeah, I'm saying...
Okay.
Well,
hang on, maybe back up a bit. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this.
Okay, I'm saying I think it makes sense for Stephen to do what he did. I think the mistake, if he made one, and I think it was a big one, but again, we'll have to get his thoughts, is that move against Wigglesworth where he alienates everybody else to allow this majority against him to form originally, and then also trusting Spencer after he wrote your name down the week before, and I understand that you have this great relationship and everything, but even so, that has to be a big red flag. And so those two things combined are what leads to his downfall here. It's not him deciding to split the vote in a certain way. It's
right.
A confluence of everything else that came before it.
Okay, I guess. So I was confused. I was coming at it from the angle of the concern is Joe having an idol. I want to be protected in case he does have an idol, and I'm pretty sure I am the rebound vote here. I want both of these votes that I'm taking to be on Abby so that if he does have an idol, I've not burned one on Joe. Because he's going to play his idol either way. And if he doesn't have an idol, then so be it, and then he's going to be vulnerable the next time he doesn't get the necklace. All right. I guess let's get into actually how this advantage works. And this is something we had a lot of questions about. I still have a lot of questions about rules intricacies of this advantage that I hope to ask Steven someday. But the first thing and the most important thing that we talked about last week is on his piece of paper, it said, you're going to do this when it's your turn to vote. As it turns out, he gets to raise his hand and explain what it is and how it works and what he's going to do before anyone votes, which I think, first of all, is fair. Like, I don't think you can do it halfway through. I think it either has to be before everyone or after everyone other than Steven has gotten to vote. What did you make of seeing this actually come into play, though?
Yeah, I think it is a lot fairer, and it clears up a lot of those weird, like, what-if hypotheticals that we were running through beforehand. So this does seem like the best way to do it.
Yeah, so he ends up stealing Joe's vote here. He ends up using Joe's own vote to cast a vote for Joe, which was very fun and very cute. But at the end of the day here, Dom, it results in, of course, a 4-3-2 split. That is the end of the game for Stephen Fishback. Obviously a huge, huge deal. Probably the person that most people in kind of like the Survivor podcast and Twitter community had their eye on this season. Obviously someone we were rooting for very hard and everyone was rooting for very hard. What's your take now that it's all over?
Yeah, this seems like a very fitting way for his story to end. Like if it was just him going out pre-merge as a third boot because Andrew Savage doesn't like him, that would not be remotely satisfying. But him going out in this massive blaze of glory because he somehow overplayed in some ridiculous way, that seems appropriate to me. Like that is the quintessential Stephen Fishback story, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun that we got to see him put into practice some of the stuff that he's been talking about for a long time, like building really good relationships and so on, and like using his advantage to try to build good relationships. And I think that's honestly just, again, what cost him here is telling people about his advantage, specifically Spencer, and just putting too much trust in Spencer. But look, when you're Steven, you're going to have a huge target on your back every single time for the duration of the game, essentially. What are you going to do?
It was so surreal just throughout the season, having listened to him on RHAP for years now, just like seeing him actually out there, like taking part in votes and doing badly in challenges and, you know, all of these things which we associate with Steven. And like, he's actually out there on our screens living that again.
Crying.
And
when I think crying, I think Steven Fishback.
Yeah, crying. and, you know, having these massive Neanderthal feet as well. Yeah, it's, yeah, everything that you associate with his personality, like, it's not just based on those memories of token trees that we have from 6 years ago now. It's actually like, this is a present thing that's currently happening. We get to watch it play out in on our screens now in real time.
Yeah, there was a great kind of final parting shot of Steven running in the water of water basketball that I really loved, like a gazelle that had just been shot. Yeah.
Yeah, or I think as he was leaving Tribal Council, he like stumbled quickly on the thing, and there was that musical clang in the background. That is Steven, I think. It wouldn't be right if that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's frankly too soon to even really give parting thoughts about what it was like to have Steven Fish back on Survivor and what it's like now that he's been voted out. I think this is like honestly going to go down as one of the biggest moments for like our kind of online Survivor community, is getting Steven back out there, and then this episode where it all came to a crashing halt, and especially in the fashion that it all happened. I think this is going to be one of like the most memorable things that ever comes out of Survivor, as far as like our involvement in the everyone, you and I and everyone listening, will never forget about Steven Fishback back here the second time.
Yeah, and say what you want about the game that he played, and I'm sure we will and others will in due course, and he will give his own thoughts on that when he's allowed to, but I think as a character, he's one of the most compelling characters that we've seen in a very long time. Just seeing him go out there and seeing all of those neuroses on display and seeing him work through those and then repeating those same storylines from before, where he feels on the outside of his group, and then when he does finally get his footing, he's in this alliance with someone that he knows he can't beat, and then the question is, well, when can I get this guy out, and so on. And it's you get to see all of that. You get to see those familiar themes, but also developed and have this new light shone upon them. And so I just thought it was fascinating throughout. And even though it was a kind of weird or strange edit at times, it was one which I really enjoyed seeing flourish over the course of 10 or 11 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really interesting to compare it to Token Sheens, where up through the final immunity challenge, virtually every single thing always went Steven's way. And then it was obviously over and he knew it and there was nothing he could do, and that's going to happen from time to time. Whereas this time, we saw a whole different version of Steven Fishback with like flawed, you know, not to say that he was like perfect his first time, but a much more human side, I would say, of Steven. And like, I joke about the crying, but I think that really did add a lot to his character and his overall like place in Survivor history, to get these, you know, see this other side of him, this more like kind of like pure in the game, kind of excited to be out there for the experience side.
Yeah, Token Sheen Steven was fine, and I know he certainly ranks among all of our favorites, but this time we got to see a lot more of every side of his personality, like the humor, the kind of neurotic paranoia and everything that goes along with that and so on. Like, all of the things that you want to see, we got to see in greater quantities and in a more interesting fashion this time.
Yeah, and I mean, my sister is a casual viewer. I've brought her up from time to time. I have a couple other friends that watch casually. Every single one of them does not love Joe and does not love Spencer. They love Steven Fishback.
Okay, I think, I don't know if that's an entirely representative sample
of
the audience, but one thing that hasn't been as enjoyable is like the howls of rage coming from some parts of the online Survivor fan base that Spencer had the temerity to vote out Steven Fishback, his best friend, his god, you know, just get over it. Like, it's... I think it was the correct move for Spencer. We haven't really touched on that, but I think it was a smart thing to do here. But regardless of whether it was smart or not, why would you hold that against him for making the move, when if it was Steven making a move against Spencer, you would not have the same outrage about it?
Right, exactly. And I think there were plenty of alternate timelines where this is Steven making a move against Spencer, and that's just how the game is played, and Steven is the knowingest know-it-all in those timelines.
Although it has been odd to see Steven... That contrast between the way he reacted to that blindside in the moment and then also in his Ponderosa video, where he was basically the model of class about it, and then now on Twitter, where like he's firing shots at Spencer, he's getting into these arguments, and then earlier in the season when Rob was like mildly critical of him and he just went off on him as well. I don't get what's going on there. So if you have any insights on that.
Okay, so after seeing him leave, I was really rethinking, you know, we talked a lot before the season about Steven not tweeting between coming back from Cambodia and then like a month, maybe more than that, went by before he started tweeting again. And I was thinking, what could that mean? And eventually I was thinking, you know, as of last week, I was thinking, okay, he's the losing finalist again, and it's just weird for him. Now I kind of get it, where it's like, after you go out like this, the way he did, where he splits his votes and that costs it, you know, he uses his advantage and then splits them, and then as a result, he is the one who leaves. After going out there as the survivor know-it-all, what do you even say? Like, how can you, like, how much, it seems to me like that would be something that I would want some time before I even tried to process.
Yeah, and it's at the hand of someone that you considered a close friend,
right,
and who legitimately blindsided you with that. And also, your body is just decaying out there, and just, you know, physically and mentally, you're breaking down. So, yeah, I imagine after that, you're not going to be hopping back on Facebook and Twitter immediately. You're going to need some time to process it.
Yeah. Let's quickly touch on, I did think, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but at least for me, I thought this was a very good move for Spencer. Steven, if Spencer is telling me the truth and Steven did say that he didn't think Steven could beat Spencer in the end, I would definitely do the same thing. Like, I know Steven is a rational player who is going to go to the end with people he thinks he has a great chance of beating. And if he's telling me that I'm not one of those people, and I know how extraordinarily capable he is at swaying others and making good strategic moves, Steven's got to go.
Yeah, I think as so often this season, you have to separate the move itself from the explanation as it's given on screen, because the explanation didn't really make any sense, but none of this season in storyline terms really makes any sense now. So it's like, well, knowing what little we know about the facts of the situation, does this seem like a smart move? And yes, it does. Like, this, I think it's pretty clear. You take out Steven now, you don't let that four-person majority kind of ride it through and actually take control. Instead, you band together the outsiders now. You don't need to stick with them long term, and you probably won't, given how the season's playing out so far. And so next week, you can, you know, flip back to Tasha and Kimmy if you want to. You can go with Jeremy again. You can do something else. And so, yeah, I think this is a fine move for Spencer, and he might not be in a good position going forward, but I don't think he was in one anyway, necessarily. So it's like, if he wasn't in a good position before, he won't be in one now. But then if he wasn't before, nothing would change that. So it's fine.
Right. The number one priority is, if you are concerned about Jeremy, Steven, Tasha, and Kimmy, one of those four is leaving here every single time. And I'm totally happy for it to be out of that group. I'm fine with it being Steven, where after this, I still have Joe to point at. I still have Jeremy to point at. I still have Tasha to point at. Potentially Wentworth and other possible jury threats once we hit the end game. This is a phenomenal spot, I would say, for the young lad.
Yeah, so I guess one question would be why Steven over Jeremy? And the answer might be, if the whole thing hinges on Abby and just someone being able to control Abby and keep her in line, if you suddenly change the vote to Jeremy last minute, then that she might just go haywire.
Yeah.
And everything's off the table then. And I think as it was, he was not quite sure that Abby would vote the way that he wanted to. I think the issue going forward is going to be, does he make a move against Jeremy before it's too late and at the right time? And that's complicated by Jeremy having this idol that he doesn't know about, and also you have these other threats in the game that he has to be aware of. So I could see that being the big thing that takes him down, where like he manages to get out Joe, maybe he gets out Wentworth, but then he makes his move against Jeremy. Jeremy's able to come back with the idol, or, you know, Jeremy's able to get the votes together, and that's the thing that really does him in.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we have to see it from Spencer where everything looks like it's going beautifully and it's all finally going to work out, and then Jeremy has yet another hidden immunity idol and we're all fucked?
And it would be the ultimate conclusion to his two-season story arc if, just as it seemed like he's able to cross that hurdle and win, Jeremy's able to bring it all crashing down to the ground. And
yeah.
I'm assuming here that he will make that move against Jeremy, but at this stage of the game, like, he might think, maybe I can beat Jeremy in the end, but even if I can't, like, he's the only one that I really trust at the moment, despite everything that's going on with Steven. And so if he ends up going back to Jeremy, then he might end up sticking with him past the point where he can realistically do that anymore.
Yeah, he could easily be looking potentially at Jeremy as someone that he could possibly beat. And if he removes Steven, he can then, you know, plan ahead of time. And after I vote out Steven, I'm going to go home and have a conversation with Jeremy about how now it's you and me, buddy, and we're going to roll through here now.
Yeah, I was wondering about the possibility of Spencer as a losing finalist if someone like Jeremy's involved there too, which I don't think makes any sense either in gameplay terms or in terms of what we're being shown at the moment. But it's something that's interesting to think about because we just don't even imagine Spencer in those terms at all. So it's kind of fun to run the numbers there.
It'd be hilarious if like he's getting the full symphony orchestra for catching a minnow. He's a losing finalist and they bring in like the Boston Pops to come play like as he's getting no votes, but he's still everyone's favorite. Yeah. So let's see. Let's get next time on Survivor, we have the loved ones coming to visit, marking the TV debut of Spencer's girlfriend, Marcella, a.k.a. the Young Lass, which will also, Dom, of course, bring to an end Spencer's girlfriend immunity. You getting nervous? Because I sure am.
Yeah, and also possibly the end of Joe's actual immunity as well as his family immunity, because we saw him say at the start of the season in that opening segment that, you know, the first time he played, he just wanted to see his dad out there, and he wasn't able to do that. Now it looks like he will get that chance, but when he gets that chance, is that just him done for now, or can he ride it a bit further?
Yeah, I mean, can Joe, if he doesn't get this necklace, make it through yet again?
I'm tempted to say no, but then I would have been tempted to say that last week as well, and, you know, it played out differently. So I guess if something happens involving Wentworth or Jeremy or Spencer or Tatcher, like, there are lots of ways it could, you know, there are lots of names that could come up instead.
Yeah, at least for me, if I'm anyone out there virtually, final eight seems a little too close for comfort for me in terms of letting Joe get any free passes and get yet another chance to run the table. But we'll see. I think it's definitely at least within the realm of possibility. I think it's hard to say that in a game this kind of fluid and dynamic that Joe is a log goner if he doesn't get that necklace. I'm still looking at Jeremy as my number one winner candidate, although I think Spencer and Wentworth caught up a bit to him this week. Just because it seems like it's pretty tough for him to turn this around, although I still think it looks pretty likely that he's going to be able to find some way to rebound. Dom, anything else to add on that or anything else to even get to before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think that's it. It was a very long Survivor episode this week and a very long podcast episode, but both were highly enjoyable and hopefully they were for you as well. And I guess we will see you next week. Are